Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining us for this episode of A New Way to Win. I'm your host, Reba Magulik, with the D8 Group. And the D8 Group was founded to help organizations and private businesses better understand federal acquisition processes, to help find the ideal fit government contracting opportunities for pursuit, and also to leverage our team's business development resources to strategically but ethically position for a win. Our show, A New Way to Win, chronicles priorities at the federal government contracting agencies and hot topics within the federal contracting industry today. Our goal is to provide a platform for meaningful engagement and dialogue between government leaders and federal contracting industry members. So today, we're very excited to welcome Nicole Case with Leidos into our studio. What advice would you have for large businesses and small businesses? Like, in all of your experience, what does it take to win? What does it take to grow?
I think that the very first thing is that you have to have very clear focus on the things that you're going to invest in. So one of the things that it's almost...
Is this a common mistake, would you say?
I think one of the things, it's almost easier to say...
what you shouldn't do.
What doesn't work.
Okay,
right?
Let's go with that.
So,
what doesn't work?
What doesn't work, first of all, is going to be a rifle shot, A rifle shot would work. That's one bullet. Get my guns right here. It's a scattershot approach,
right?
A shotgun approach, right? Because in the end, it doesn't matter if you're a $10 billion company or if you're writing the same check for your groceries that you're writing out for your payroll, right?
Mm-hmm.
That there's a finite bucket of money that you're going to invest in going after business.
Right.
And you have to decide where you're going to put those investments. And if you take and you're chasing every random thing that comes along, or you have these ideas, maybe you've got four great ideas of where you want to build business, but they are not themselves complementary, and therefore you're not reusing the effort that you've got. You're not using your investment effectively.
Right.
So I think the first thing to start with is, do you really have clear focus, and does that focus then percolate to all of the team?
Mm-hmm.
Does everybody understand we are going to pursue and win this thing for these reasons?
So it's not enough just for the senior leader to understand.
No, it
where
has
you're
to
going.
Make it all the way down. And there also has to be a reason why, right? There's a reason why you think this is the right business to go after.
Does everybody need to know what that reason is, or
I
is it sufficient for the leadership to know it?
Yeah, I think that everybody does have to understand at least some aspect
buy-in.
Of the why. Because you have to tie it to something. It can't just be, oh, we're going to go get this next great contract in worm farming, but and everybody who's sitting around at
that's
the table.
That's a nice example.
That's my favorite example. Everybody knows, well, we don't do worm farming, and there's no worm farmers here, and we have no past performance in worm farming. Well, but then you say, but we do this other type of farming, and this is how we're expanding it into adjacent markets.
Exactly.
And Fred over here, he doesn't actually have worm farming experience, but he did beetle farming, and so we'll be able to do everything we want to do with this. This is going to sound
so crazy.
I'm
really liking this analogy.
You know, it's going to sound so crazy when people are just like, what's she talking about, beetle
farming? No. It makes complete sense.
But
it really does.
You find the adjacency.
It's like the current customer, current capability, current customer, new capability,
exactly.
That whole, but I like this example better.
And the other thing is that you have to build those adjacencies for people so that they do get the buy-in, right? So you can't expect everybody to make the intuitive leaps that you're making as a leader.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be able to explain those things, because in the movies, they say you have to get a way to get people to suspend their disbelief, right? That's suspend your disbelief actually means create belief. Right, you have to create belief within your team that it is possible to win.
The art of the possible. That's what I was thinking when you were describing that. It's hard for people to wrap their minds around the art of the possible.
Right. So you have to build those bridges as a leader. So I think starting with, what do you have to do to win business? You have to start with that focus, and you have to know why you're doing the things you're doing, and your team has to know why you're doing the things you're doing. Because ultimately, you're going to ask them to work really, really hard,
right?
And they got to believe that the work that they are doing is going to pan out. And you know, in some cases, people might be willing to invest because there's a comp structure, right? Or there's a bonus pool or something like that that in the end they're playing towards, right?
Right.
Well, they think of their time as their investment. You think of their time as their time card. But to them, it's their personal investment. And that personal investment comes at the cost of many other things. That personal investment comes at the cost of investing in something else they might be making more money doing someplace else.
Right.
That personal investment comes at the cost of maybe I'm going to have to miss you know, my kid's recital, right, or I can't go on a field trip because I have to take care of this other important thing. Mm-hmm. So their personal investment, their personal time, they have to believe that there's going to be an outcome and a payoff. And again, I will still go back to mission driven, that if they believe in the work that you do, that's going to take them far, but it's going to take them even farther if they believe that there's the payoff is there for them. And for most people in growth, they're competitive people already.
Right.
They want to win.
That's right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that might even be, I'm going to win.
That's kind of what makes them tick.
Right. I'm going to win this parking spot. Like, I'm going to get to this parking spot before anybody else can.
They're just naturally competitive.
In everything they do.
Yeah.
In everything they do. And so they have, they are now, as a leader, you have to understand the thing you're asking them to do is competing against all the other things mm-hmm. they want to do in their life.
Right.
Your thing has to be much more important and much more interesting mm-hmm. than
equally
they
compelling.
Want to win it.
Yes. Yeah. That makes sense. What advice would you give to businesses that would like to team with Leidos? That's always a tough one.
It is a tough
big organization.
One. It's a big organization.
But
so
frame it in the lens of I'm coming to you as a small business. What would get your attention versus what would not get your attention, or what would cause you to want to team with me versus, you know, maybe not even take the meeting?
Right. And I have to admit, and I apologize to the world out there, that there's a number of meetings I've been asked to do that I haven't taken. Mm-hmm. And initially, I was at least able to use the reason why that I just took this job. I'm still getting, mm-hmm. but in reality, what you gave to me wasn't interesting. And there wasn't
a good, straightforward answer.
Right.
It's important to be interesting, isn't it?
It's important to be interesting, and it's important to be relevant. Mm-hmm. And so, I can give you, again, it's easier to go to the negative. I can give you examples of what's not going to work.
Sure.
It's absolutely not going to work if you send me an email and say that, you know, I'd like to meet with you because we work with this other part of Leidos. Well, this other part of Leidos has as much to do with my business as, or has nothing to do with my business. Mm-hmm. It's, you may as well have said that you worked with this other part of, you know, GDIT.
Right.
Or CSRA or whatever.
I almost feel like that might be parallel in the government, too.
I think it is.
You go to approach a government, well, you know, I'm at DOJ, I've supported this other.
Right.
Sometimes it might work, sometimes it doesn't, but that is a common misunderstanding. We believe that that's going to carry weight to say that.
Right, and I think the problem with that is that if they
but
would
I
just...
But I think that the rationale is that they're thinking, hey, I'm telling you, I've already been vetted by your organization, that I already have a good working experience with your organization, but what you're saying is,
Well, there's two reasons for
that.
There's two reasons. One is you're telling me you've already worked with this person or that person. I don't know those people, actually.
Yeah.
So
Don't assume
that I know who those people are. I brand new at an organization. I certainly don't know who they are. Mm-hmm. A year from now, I might know who they are, but that still doesn't ensure. Well, no, it still doesn't ensure that I actually have the same set of criteria about what's important to me and a partner mm-hmm. as they do, right?
Sure.
So the validity of having worked with some other part of Leidos is that you know how to be a good subcontractor. You know what
to
a large business, right? Mm-hmm. That's the piece that's valid, but nobody talks about that piece.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to come up with that as the rationale about why I should meet with you, then you should probably tell me about the program that you did, the mm-hmm. role that you did, and how you were a good partner to the company,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's more effort. So people stop with the first sentence, and they don't realize that the rationale is, I'm not going to make that intuitively. And I think we say this when we're writing bids all of the time, right? You're not going to expect an evaluator to mm-hmm. to work very hard to understand the point you're trying to make.
Yeah, right? Be clear.
I'm not going to work very hard to understand the point that somebody who's trying to approach me from a partnership perspective is trying to make.
Mm-hmm.
It's not my job to work hard to figure that out. It's your job to explain it to me. But the other part that I think is relevant when you say, well, I worked with this other part of Leidos. Well, we work in health,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think this is true. Our mission is unique. And that's
mm-hmm.
true on the government side as well. If you want to say, if we want to go to the VA and you want to tell them how great you were at Department of Transportation,
mm-hmm.
well, unless you're talking to VA logistics, they're not going to be interested in the work that you did in transformation unless you draw the parallel for them.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So maybe
be clear in your communication and explaining, like you said, what is the point?
Right.
Why are you bringing that up?
Right. So maybe you did some amazing project that, you know, was an agile DevOps project mm-hmm. or an AI project or one of the buzzwords today right now that you know the VA is interested. That's the part that you need to bring forward. Yes, it's really important that you did it in a federal agency too, because that mm-hmm. demonstrates that you do know how to work with federal customers and you understand the sales process, et cetera. But until you draw the parallels for them, and it probably has to go two or three layers deeper than most people try.
Sure.
And the flip side of this is nobody wants a 5-page email.
Right, right, right.
But concise is really difficult, but it's really, really important. And, mm-hmm. and hitting those key points is really, really important. So if you're going to approach a small business approaching a large business that you haven't had the opportunity to make a personal connection with yet, mm-hmm. Getting to that very concise, relevant reason why we should talk to you, the closing point on that is that you've done a little bit of research, a little bit of homework. You mm-hmm. understand what the agency forecast is,
mm-hmm.
right? So if you know that I am responsible for military health and VA, then close your note to me with, and we want to talk to you about how our capabilities and this experience mm-hmm. is directly applicable to XYZ opportunity that was on the last forecast.
It's funny that you said that. So that's one piece of advice we always give our clients. Like, don't just ask for a capability brief or make it opportunity specific.
Right.
Know exactly which opportunity. That often helps. Because
right.
if you're getting an email that says, hey, Nicole, I'd like to talk to you about X opportunity.
And here's the value add I could bring to you.
Yes.
And you have to be specific about it because, mm-hmm. But if you've done that, then I at least feel like you've done some homework
mm-hmm.
and there's some validity to the time it's going to take. And
if your answer is, hey, sorry, we're already teamed.
Right.
At least that prospective teammate quickly gets an answer.
Right.
Right.
Right. And let's move on.
It's like a yes or no
right.
versus, you know, being caught in this loop or,
right. or just not getting an answer.
Right.
Right. And mm-hmm. again, my apologies to those who've maybe reached out to me. And
we're all guilty of it.
We're all guilty of it. It's hard, but there comes a point in time when you realize I can't possibly respond to every person who
right.
comes to me right now. So then I have to say I'm...
Was there anybody that ever wowed you? Like, do you have an example of where you were like, that's kind of interesting. That sparked my interest. Let me get back to them right away.
Yeah, it certainly has happened.
Or pass it on to the appropriate person.
So in my first... 90 days at Leidos, I would at least try to respond to people to say, I want you to understand, I'm not even taking teaming conversations right now.
Too early.
It's too early. I'm very inwardly focused.
Mm-hmm.
And when I get my team structure in place, then I'm going to add these two account manager roles. And ultimately, I added Ryan Loving as mm-hmm. the military health account owner and Jeff Johnson as the VA account owner. Ultimately, teaming decisions are going to be within their account-specific roles because they own mm-hmm. their pipelines. They own the execution of those pipelines.
Right.
So initially, I at least had the excuse that, you know, I'm still building my team. I'm too inwardly focused. But even within that time frame, within those first, let's say, 90 days, I probably still did have, and I'm not joking, 3 to 5 that I did take.
Wow.
Right? But that's not very many. If
yeah.
you consider, you know, the amount of time I'm talking about, and I had many, many, many more requests than that.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't lying to the folks that I said no to. I really wasn't taking.
There's only
teaming.
So much of your time.
Right.
There's only so many hours on the clock, right, Nicole?
Right. But there were still 3 or 4 of them that made it through.
Yeah.
Some pretty hard filters on my part to say, okay, this is opportunistic. This is specific. Mm-hmm. This I can see a potential value add. So I did take those meetings and start working on some of those partner relationships early on mm-hmm. because they fit into a bigger picture vision of what I had, either a bigger picture vision or a specific opportunity that was something mm-hmm. that mattered in 2019. Right?
Sure, sure. No, that's great advice. So I want to move on to some more personal, maybe the more personal arena. So for executives who are looking to make a career in this industry, they're attracted to this industry, they're looking to grow, or they just entered it. What common mistakes have you seen business development and capture executives make, not only in their professional career, but in their personal life? What would you tell them to avoid as they grow, you know, their career in this industry?
Well, I think there's a number of things. One of them we've touched on already is they lose that beginner's mindset.
Mm-hmm.
Right, they lose the ability to think and to grow and to be open to a new set of ideas. So if you look at even something like the military health system, 15 years ago when I started in this industry, there was a set of sort of rules or definitions that we all agreed this is what military health is like.
Mm-hmm.
In the last 5 years, a bunch of those rules went out
changed.
The window.
Yeah,
right?
It's really changed.
I actually was briefing our executive leadership team recently. And I said, one of the things that you guys need to understand about the VA at this point is that if you went back 5 or 10 years, you would say Small business set asides, well, those are going to be like $30 million mm-hmm. and below. They're not going to be very big. They're probably not very strategic. I said at this point in the last month, the VA has awarded $400 million opportunities.
Big ones.
To small disadvantaged businesses, mm-hmm. veteran-owned businesses, $400 million, $600 million,
yeah,
very,
very,
very large,
substantial
opportunities. And so when you want to, again, this is to an executive leadership team, when you mm-hmm. want to be critical of us, mm-hmm. of not priming these opportunities, because you see these big award notices go out, but you don't know that was actually awarded on a small business set aside.
Right.
That company is actually an SDVOSB, and their jaws yeah. just drop open, right? Because certainly they knew they didn't know who that company was, but they had no idea that it was actually an SDVOSB, and it was awarded on a set aside. We couldn't have primed it. We would have loved to have primed it, but we couldn't prime it.
Right.
So those types of things change as time goes on, and if you're not cognizant and aware and mm-hmm. going back and questioning your own biases, mm-hmm. then you're going to become irrelevant, mm-hmm. right?
And so be dynamic. Is that what I'm hearing?
It's not just dynamic. It's continuing to learn. It's uh-huh. continuing to have an open mindset and to also challenge yourself and question yourself because, you know, again, going back to all the interviewing I'm doing right now, mm-hmm. there are some capture managers out there have been doing this for 15, 10 years, right? They've got some great tools and some great skills, but when you sit and talk to them, uh-huh. you're not always feeling like they've kept abreast of what's actually happening within trends, within acquisitions, mm-hmm. changes within
like
the
customer
space.
Like they know the
space.
Processes, perhaps. Like
right.
they're well-versed from a process perspective.
Right, from an execution.
They've lost their...
The edge. They've yeah. lost their edge. They've stopped questioning why, and they've stopped also questioning themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so if you don't...
They're losing innovation.
Yeah. If you don't step back and say, I've approached, you know, the reason we can win in this customer space exactly the same way for the last 10 years, mm-hmm. it's probably stale by now. It probably isn't actually relevant any longer.
Right. You sounded good for the first 5 years.
But not so much anymore. Right. Exactly. Exactly. So I think on the professional side, it's definitely, mm-hmm. it definitely comes down to ensuring that you stay fresh and you just stop taking yourself so seriously and
yeah.
stop believing that your own stuff doesn't smell because
right.
it does, right? So you have to stay human along the way and continue
yeah.
to learn. I think
what about on the personal life? Have you seen people making common mistakes?
Sure. And I mean, I'm probably in the middle of the worst of those common mistakes right now. So the worst thing that you can do is to get so tied up into your job that you mm-hmm. you lose sense of self, right?
But what if you love your job?
I do love my job. And
what if it's your, you know, identity?
Yeah, and
is it so bad?
No, it is, because eventually, ultimately, no matter what your job is, you're mm-hmm. still a cog in the system at some point.
So
right?
true.
And so,
true.
We are all utterly replaceable. Don't tell my boss that, but we're all utterly replaceable along the way. And if you are so tied up in your job that you lose time with your friends mm-hmm. and you lose time with your family and you don't maintain those personal connections and the personal growth that comes mm-hmm. from what you do outside your job. So
tell us about some of yours, because I know just from knowing you that, you know, sports.
Right.
Photography.
Right.
So, reading. I mean, there's a lot of things that, you know, as busy as you are, and I'd also like you to comment, maybe give some advice on how you've been living between San Antonio and D.C. and for 15 years being a rock star in this industry remotely.
Right.
You know, how do you balance all that? But yet I find that you do a great job of actually feeding your own soul, too, with the other things that you love besides
right.
your job. And we know you love your job.
I do. But I think that part of it is that you have to find that time to prioritize. And if you don't refill your own bucket, mm-hmm. then you do become that empty vessel and you don't have anything that fills your heart as mm-hmm. well. So, I mean, for me, one of the things that I came to the realization a few years back is that I have to have things that add beauty and color to my life
mm-hmm.
Because we work in such, I mean, we're both wearing black and gray, right?
So there's a little color
there's
in
a little,
here.
There's
Come
a little
on.
Color, but not much, right? But if you don't have something that balances out all the hard edges that, uh-huh. that we live in, then you become, a less interesting person. And so so I do. I enjoy photography a lot, and I love the fact that, you know, we now have phones that take better pictures than the cameras did
oh,
5
yeah.
years ago.
I love that, too.
So I always have a camera with me at this point, and so I still, actually, I just placed my order this week for this year's calendars that that I print every year. Mm-hmm. And the calendars. And one of the things I love about these calendars is I find that they create a counterbalance to the life that we live. So mm-hmm. inside our corporate culture, we edit and re-edit and refine and fix and tweak everything right. that we do. And it gets tons of hands on it. And there's never a finished product because it always has one more edit or one more draft to go through.
Okay.
And one of the things that I do with the photography that I do is I don't do any photo editing. There's mm-hmm. absolutely no touch-ups.
Unfiltered.
It's completely unfiltered. Mm-hmm. And if that picture isn't exactly perfect in that moment, mm-hmm. then we throw it away. Or I throw it away. Mm-hmm. So it becomes a very pure process for me because it is coming down to capturing exactly one moment in time mm-hmm. in the perfection that it is. And if it's not perfect in that moment in time, I'm not trying to change it. I'm accepting it. And so there's so many lessons that go into that activity. And it sounds very, you know, wah, 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 but it's true.
I love it.
Right.
I think that's beautiful.
Because if you can't learn from that along the way, right, mm-hmm. because there's everything that we do at some point, you have to get to some level of acceptance of an imperfection. Mm-hmm. And learning to accept only perfection in another place mm-hmm. balances that out. So
very profound.
I know it's
me likey.
Just one little picture, and that's what it's about. But I'll take 100 pictures to get to one
perfect one.
Might go into that might have the possibility of being able to go into the calendar that I produce. So
they're gorgeous. And
52 pictures. You have to find 52 over the
perfect
span of a
moments.
Year. Yeah,
that's
52
wonderful.
Perfect moments. Exactly.
So last question. Tell us about you've kind of talked about how you balance personal life, but we are curious about this entrepreneurship experience that you had at age 18, this first business.
Yeah.
How did that come to be?
It was actually a fun story.
And it was your father-in-law at 18, so you were married at 18.
No, I wasn't married at 18. He was my future father-in-law.
Future father-in-law. Okay, thanks for clarifying.
Yeah. So I lived in the Midwest growing up. I grew up in Nebraska. Some people might not realize I've lived either in Texas or Nebraska my entire federal career. Mm-hmm. Most people think I live here, which I don't. I just happen to be here all the time.
Right, right.
Or I come in for events. So you see me at the events, and so you just assume I'm here the rest of the time. Mm-hmm. But I grew up in Nebraska, and we went to Minnesota for Christmas with my future husband's family. Mm-hmm. And there was a small town that these gigantic Christmas decorations were produced in. So we pull into this small town in Minnesota, and sort of the perfect like Thomas Kincaid moment. Ooh. With the snow and the lights, and
yeah.
you're waiting for the Jingle Bells sleigh to go by or whatever. But all of these houses had these amazing Christmas decorations on them. So if you imagine like a 7-foot poinsettia,
okay,
right, all covered in lights and garland,
oh
and
my goodness.
You know, a Santa sleigh and reindeer that was 25 feet long, and bells that were like 4 feet in diameter. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, these houses are amazing. All these decorations, and it was funny because they're. My in-laws' family's like, eh. Yeah.
They've seen it all
We've
the time.
We've seen it. They took
no
it for granted.
Deal.
I'm like, no, these are amazing. And then it got yeah. even better because they're manufactured there, and they were made in such a way that you just hung them up and plugged them in. Like, there was no string and lights.
So,
no,
yeah. yeah.
Hang it up and plug it in.
Play.
Exactly. Plug and play Christmas decoration. So we're there at Christmas, and then we're driving home, and it's about an 8-hour drive. Uh-huh. And I sat behind my father-in-law the whole drive home. I'm like, Roger. We could make money on this. Like, you should fund us in this, and we could sell these things. These are amazing. And so by the end of the drive, he, you know, had finally, you know, bought into it. And so then in the fall, the next
you had 8 hours to pitch him.
I had 8 hours to pitch him.
8-hour elevator
and
pitch.
He was
in the car.
Stuck. He couldn't go anywhere.
Captive audience.
My captive investor. But he was also an entrepreneur. He had started numerous businesses along the way, mm-hmm. and. He was a lovely man, and so he gave us the chance. He
That's
seeded
so
this money for us, and the first year we set up like gypsies in a parking lot, and we made about $1.75 an hour by the time we got through with it. But the second year we moved to a much better market space, and by the end of 5 years we netted $55,000 in 4 weeks.
Wow.
So we turned over over $200,000 worth of product in the span
goodness.
Of 4 weeks, and we're talking about 4 college students.
And this is before like you could advertise it on the internet.
There was no internet,
Facebook.
No, it was, and we know it was all about location because we set up on a really good corner we're still gypsies in a parking lot that we rented from. The bank at that time.
Gosh, that is such a cool story. I love stories like that.
It was a great story, and it's a great experience. And you know. 4 college students and a high school student, and mm-hmm. we were running that business and learned a lot along the way about business relationships and mm-hmm. partnerships And in the end, karma came through for us big time, yeah. I think, because, you know, folks would drive up and we literally set it up so you could drive around the display. Uh-huh. And because it's cold, it's Nebraska. And so we would come up to the car and at first there's a couple of big guys that were, you know, mm-hmm. part of our team, and the people wouldn't roll their windows down. These big guys coming
they
out.
They didn't make the best booth babes.
They were scary. They were not good booth babes. And so I'm like,
a little intimidating.
You guys are scaring the cars away. Like, they only roll their windows down if I walk up to them. So I'm like, you need to smile. And of course, these guys smile. They're like, arr. Like, okay, that's not going to work either. Right? That's even worse. So I put Santa hats on them. And once they had a Santa hat on them, then people would roll their windows down. And it was
hilarious.
You could go car to car and you take off the Santa hat, they wouldn't roll their window down. Put on the Santa hat, they roll it.
It took off that intimidating edge,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. It made them friendly.
Softened
and approachable. So you know, learn a lot about what's approachable and what's not. But, it was a great experience. And the other thing that we learned is sort of the packaging of it, because mm-hmm. once you did start talking to somebody, the first thing somebody would ask is they would say, oh, well, can we get a discount on it? Now, we were not running on a very high margin.
Oh, I'm sure.
Right? It wasn't federal margins, but it was better than – it was a double-digit margin at least. But people would want a discount. And so we're like, oh, we need a really good answer for this because we really don't want a discount.
Right.
And so we finally were like, oh, well, you know, they won't give me a discount on my tuition at college. So I really and that was
that's
it.
A good answer.
It's not you, it's me. So I think
right. So many lessons learned.
Yeah, exactly. It comes back all around to the packaging and setting people's expectations and understanding what you're trying to sell them. And that's lessons that carry through for your entire life if you end up in a sales career. Well, carries through for your entire life, regardless of what you do, actually,
yeah.
Right?
Gosh, I love it. This has been really, really great. Thank you, Nicole. Learned so much. I feel spiritually filled, you know, learned a lot professionally. Thank you so much. And thank you, everybody, for listening in on this edition of A New Way to Win. We hope you will join us again.